you spoke so eloquently in the Capitol Rotunda the other night, and I wondered if you could reflect for me for maybe just a half a minute or a minute, if you had a personal favorite story or memory of the late President that you might be able to share with us.
Well, I've got one that always stands out in my mind that has to do with the debate over the 1986 tax bill, which made some fundamental reforms in taxes. And at the time the Democrats controlled the House, I was a member of the House leadership, and the Republicans controlled the Senate. And the bill that President Reagan wanted by way of reform and so forth, couldn't be gotten through the House Ways and Means Committee. The bill that came out of committee was, many of us thought, a bad bill. The White House argued that we should go ahead and vote for it and send it over to the Senate, and then let the Senate clean it up. Well, that was a little hard for us to do. So when the bill came to the floor, a lot of us voted against the rule and sent the whole thing back to committee. So then President Reagan called. He wanted to come talk to the wayward House Republicans. And in the meantime, there had been a terrible accident up in Newfoundland. We had a plane load of guys in the 101st coming back from the Sinai. The plane crashed on takeoff, and we lost about 200 of them. Well, on the day that he was to speak to the House Republicans, he went down to Kentucky first, to Fort Campbell, participated in a memorial service for the troops down there. And then he came straight back to Capitol Hill and walked into this great big hearing room where we had all of our Republican members gathered. And he talked about patriotism and sacrifice and what it means to be an American, and about that service he'd been at down at Fort Campbell. And he got all through with that. He said, "Now, gentlemen," he said, "about that tax bill." All he ever said, people started jumping up saying, "I'm with you, Mr. President. You can count on me." Without ever talking about the tax bill at all, he turned around 70 votes, took the thing back to the floor, and passed it that afternoon. It was a remarkable display of leadership, as only Ronald Reagan could provide, and it was really something.
That's a great story. On to today. Your remarks today about terrorism around the world, the war on terrorism, and in Iraq. How are we doing? Are we remaining optimistic? Are we on track for this turnover?
I think in terms of Iraq, in terms of the turnover, that definitely will happen. To some extent, it's already happening. The Iraqis now are really running all the ministries in Baghdad. There'll be a symbolic transfer of authority on the 30th of June, but I think we've already started down the road of having them take on more and more responsibility. We've also got a lot to do in terms of standing up effective Iraqi security forces, and that effort's underway. But there's more to be done there. I don't want to underestimate for people how difficult this task is, though. It's a very hard thing to do, to go into a country that's been governed by a brutal dictator, one of the bloodiest regimes of the 20th century, that has not really ever known democracy over any period of time, and try to stand up a viable, effective democracy. I think we can do it, but it's going to require us to implement the president's strategy, to transfer authority on the 30th of June, to point towards those elections that will be held next January, to work to stand up, say, Iraqi security forces. We got significant international support this week when the UN Security Council unanimously passed a resolution recognizing the new Iraqi interim government. So we're making progress, but it is going to be hard. It'll require continued sacrifice and continued effort for the U.S. for some additional period of time.
Along those lines, some months ago I had a conversation with Dory Gold, who was the Israeli ambassador to the UN several years back. He expressed some concerns in creating a government in Iraq with the Shiite majority, which is the party that has created this theocracy in Iran. And I wonder, is that a tough... We certainly don't want to see an Iranian government created in Baghdad.
No, we don't. But the lessons of Iran have not been lost on the Shia in Iraq. The most prominent leader, religious leader of the Shia community, a man named al-Sistani, who is, in many respects, has a higher standing from a religious standpoint than does Mr. Khamenei, who's now the current leader of Iran. He is opposed to the notion of a theocracy. They do not want to establish a theocracy in Iraq. His belief is that if you combine politics and religion, that politics pollutes religion. So he wants to keep it separate. He wants a government that is consistent with the overall basic tenets of Islam, and that's not surprising. It's an Islamic nation. But he's also been very clear at wanting to sort of maintain an arm's-length relationship here and not establish the theocracy that they've established in Iran. I think that's been it hadn't worked very well, frankly. A lot of very unhappy people in Iran, especially the younger generations. And I I'm convinced, at least based on everything I've seen to date, that you will have a government that's based on a Shia majority, and they represent about 60% of the population in Iraq. But I don't believe they'll establish the theocracy that we've seen next door in Iran. In some ways, if we can establish a viable, functioning democracy in Iraq based on a majority Shia population, that'll be a very strong signal, sort of discrediting, in effect, what's going on next door in Iran with their theocracy.
If we can, for a minute or two, maybe we could take a look at the long-range planning. Many people we hear talk about, and it seems like it gets lost in the shuffle here many times, with the creation of a solid democracy in Iraq. Is that going to lead to more stability throughout the Middle East and hopefully better days for the entire world?
Sure. Well, at a minimum, what we've done is taken Saddam Hussein out of the equation. He's no longer a factor. He started two wars. He produced and used weapons of mass destruction. He has, in fact, provided a safe haven for terrorists. That element is gone now. And the question is what we can stand up in its place. And the President's convinced, and I'm convinced, that with a significant effort, we can, in fact, establish a representative government in Iraq. That'll be significant, partly because Baghdad and Iraq sort of represent, in many respects, the cultural center of the Arab world. And it's been a vitally important piece of business for us to be able to get this done. And it should have a ripple effect throughout the region if we can achieve our objective there, and I think we can. It's got to affect how people in Iran look at their government, how the people next door in Syria look at their government. If the Iraqis can do it, then there's no reason why other governments out there can't do the same.
Over the course of this long range and some of the things taking a little bit longer than maybe was anticipated, I have heard variously that what we found there, once we got inside, the infrastructure, the electrical system, the water plants, had been allowed to go into disrepair, and that perhaps, you know, some of the infrastructure repair work is taking a little longer than we thought.
Well, there's no question but what Saddam Hussein diverted all of the resources to his own purposes, to some extent to building up the military, to building palaces. He built palaces for himself all over the place, and he let the Iraqi people starve. He let the power system deteriorate. Their energy system, the oil infrastructure and so forth has all been allowed to decay. And so we're having to rebuild that, which we're doing. It's part of the ongoing struggle, in part because we've got elements that are trying to destroy the power grid or pipelines and so forth, attacking that in part to undermine the authority and credibility of the coalition, as well as make life difficult for the new government that we're getting established. So we've got to, on the one hand, deal with that security threat, but we do need to complete the task of rebuilding the Iraqi infrastructure. Now, they're not without resources. They've got significant capability, over 100 billion barrel reserve of oil. They produce now about 2.5 million barrels a day. And no reason why they can't get them back upwards of 3 million barrels a day and be a major supplier that will generate additional significant revenue for the country. But they need help for now, especially in terms of getting their economy back on track, and that's what we're providing.
Overall, in terms of the war on terror, the elections were scheduled in Afghanistan. You did a marvelous recap of the position today. But for those along our network line, maybe just a real brief assessment where the position is and how we move forward with this war.
Sure. Well, in Afghanistan, of course, that was the first place we went after 9/11 because that's where Osama bin Laden was and where he launched the planning and the activity that led to the attack in New York and Washington. The Taliban's gone. We took down their government. We've captured or killed hundreds of al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden, as I say, is in hiding. We have stood up now an interim government. Hamid Karzai, the current president of Afghanistan, will address a joint session of Congress tomorrow. It'll be a great speech. It'll be a chance for him to come before the nation, thank the American people for what we've done there. They've got a new constitution they've written. There'll be free elections this fall, so they're well on their way to establishing a freely elected government, in many respects farther along than the Iraqis are at this point, but we'll have a continued presence there for some additional period of time, too, as we stand up an Afghan force that can defend the country and guarantee security.
I'd like to shift, if I might, to the economic situation here at home. The last 3 or 4 months, job figures are turning around. The economy seems to be improving. Your assessment?
Well, it's looking better and better, Reagan. It's if you look at the unemployment numbers now that just came out, 248,000 new jobs created in May. That's about 1.4 million since last August. This whole notion of a jobless recovery obviously is sort of like an urban legend. It hasn't happened. We look at our real rate of growth, about 5% over the last year. That's the fastest rate in nearly 20 years since the first Reagan term. And whether we talk about housing starts, or we talk about manufacturing activity, or we talk about home ownership or real disposable personal income, that's money in your pocket as a result of the tax cuts and so forth, all of the indicators are moving in the right direction. I think it takes a while for public opinion to sort of catch up with reality out there, but the reality is the economy is strong and it's going to get stronger. And consensus forecast going forward is we're in here for a period of sustained economic growth, which is exactly what we're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Might we focus just for a minute or two on the state of Florida, which is also in the process of making a very nice and strong comeback since 9/11.
Right. No, Florida's one of the leading states in the nation, and it's very, very important that we do everything we can to address all the major issues that we face as a nation. And of course, Florida is affected by all of those. The importance of homeland security, of a strong national economy, of dealing with the security threat that state with this extensive seacoast, for example, and all the ports you've got here has to deal with. I remember being down here last year with Governor Jeb Bush and going down to the port facility and looking at all the work that's now being done to make it easier for us to guarantee the safety and security of what comes to our ports. We're doing that all over the country. And it's a necessary part of making certain that people of Florida have the same opportunity all Americans want to live in peace and freedom and to be able to pursue our wishes and desires without having to worry about the threat from terrorists, and that people who want a job can get a job. And that we